Kaladin found his customary place by the fire to relax and think. He didn't get that chance, however, as someone stepped up and squatted down before him, a man with marbled skin and a Bridge 4 uniform. "Shen?" Kaladin asked.
"Sir?"
Shen continued to stare at him. "Is there something you wanted?" Kaladin asked.
"Am I really Bridge 4?" Shen asked.
"Of course you are."
"Where's my spear?"
Kaladin looked Shen in the eyes. "What do you think?"
"I think that I am not Bridge 4," Shen said, taking time to think with each word. "I am Bridge 4's slave."
It was like a punch to Kaladin's gut. He'd hardly heard a dozen words out of the man during their time together, and now this. The words smarted either way. Here was a man who, unlike the others, wasn't welcome to leave and make his way in the world. Dalinar had freed the rest of Bridge 4, but a Parshman? He'd be a slave no matter where he went or what he did. What could Kaladin say? "Storms, I appreciate your help when we were scavenging. I know it was difficult for you to see what we did down there sometimes."
Shen waited, still squatting, listening. He regarded Kaladin with those impenetrable, solid black Parshman eyes of his.
"I can't start arming Parshman, Shen," Kaladin said. "The Light Eyes barely accept us as it is. If I gave you a spear, think of the storm it would cause."
Shen nodded, face displaying no hint of emotion. He stood up straight. "A slave I am, then."
He withdrew.
Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 22 and 23 of Words of Radiance. If you haven't caught up on your reading yet and you are, or you're behind in an episode, please go back and listen or read up. We do not want you being spoiled. Every single chapter is a oh shit, holy fuck moment right now. So you definitely don't want to be spoiled. But if you're exactly where you're supposed to be, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and I just caught him looking at an Alethi men's fashion magazine. Uh-oh, it's Jack!
You caught me. It's my copy of Heat.
You know what? I kind of like this side of Adeline. This, like, you know, he's this, like, fierce warrior, this duelist. I kind of like the fact that he likes looking good, and he cares
he has
about
a
his...
subscription. He's got a subscription to Allure.
Or to Men's Health.
Men's Health. Yeah, exactly.
I like it. I think it's awesome, actually. It's a side of him. He's a little embarrassed by it. Like, he ends up closing the book quickly or whatever. We'll get there later. But I think it's great. I think it's awesome, actually.
Flipping through the Sears catalog.
Yeah. Didn't we all do that at one point?
Maybe.
Maybe we did when we were 12.
Maybe not. Okay, you know what? That bit of levity in this first chapter that we're covering, so it's chapter 22, Lights in the Storm.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the art?
Yeah, let's talk about the art, but, like, I just got to say right off the bat, I'm going to blurt.
You're going to...
And the blurt is, I am worried about Kaladin.
Why? Oh, because of his, like, anger and stuff?
Yeah. I think he's... There are so many drops in this chapter, and there were already a few in a few previous chapters that just all point to the unraveling of this character.
Right. Well,
and I'm greatly, greatly concerned,
like,
about that, because
you're like Syl, I think, a little bit, because she's worried as well.
She is.
Because remember the training session in the sparring grounds with Zale and Adeline? And she's like, you're not... Were you really protecting him?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, was protecting the thing you were really doing?
What you were really doing? Yeah. So then your power left you, right?
And then in here she says something like... We'll get to it later, but just to highlight what you're saying is she says something like, you're not supposed to be like this.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel Syl's concern.
Right.
And I'm feeling it ever more so in this chapter. But in terms of the fashion, turn to the left.
Yeah.
Fashion. Turn to the right. Beep, beep. Little David Bowie. Come on. Fashion. Yeah, this is funny. I don't know what I'm looking at. Am I looking at Adeline? Has he posed?
No, I don't think he's. I don't think Adeline is looking.
He's actually looking for his work because he's done it. He's in the catalog.
Dude, he's a part-time model. Oh please, that would be amazing if Adeline was a part-time model too. I'd have the biggest man crush on him ever. That'd be so funny. Yeah. He's like this awesome warrior, a general, and a fashion model. That would be so funny.
And a fashion model. I'm a part-time model.
He actually was runner-up in Aleth Carr's Top Model, the season 3. So,
oh my gosh!
I do love this art though. It's really cool.
Oh, it's killer! It's really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
I like the straight lines. The cut of the collar is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Like I can just imagine. You know, we think of a fantasy in like kind of medieval style thoughts, mm-hmm. but this is like more of a, you know, like later periods, more like a Victorian type. You know,
well there's a pinch of There's a pinch of Transylvania and a little bit of Scooby-Doo in the Ascot section of this character,
This guy's definitely... This is Fred Jones right here.
Dracula meets Fred. Yeah. Yeah. It's Dracula meets Fred.
Fred Jones is the model, the catalog. That's so great. He's got an axe hound pup.
The Alethi Light Eyes. We're bringing back the Ascot.
That's so great. Yeah.
To Roshar.
For too long. The Ascot has gone by the wayside.
Too long, the Ascot, yeah. The gods.
The hierocracy banned Ascots. Yeah. They said it was of the Voidbringers, but I don't believe so.
I've looked into the future.
And I've seen Ascots are coming back.
I've seen Ascots. Okay.
I'm into it.
This chapter begins... with another stanza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fourth stanza of Song of Winds this time. It says, storm form is said to cause a tempest of winds and showers. Beware its powers. Mm-hmm. Beware its powers. Though its coming brings the gods their night. So I want to linger on that one a little bit. It obliges a blood-red spren. And beware its end. Beware its end.
Yeah.
So it brings storm form brings the gods their night.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning maybe their end. Mm-hmm. Their end to power.
Yeah.
The storm form brings the gods. I don't know. That's the way I'm interpreting that. What about you?
I brings their night could be many different things. It could be like a time. Like brings their time, like brings you know how you could say tonight's my night. You know what I mean? Like it could be, it brings them their time in the like to come. You know, like it's their time to be in the spotlight, to be at the forefront. The thing that I kind of focus on this little thing more though is that we know that Venli and Esh and I think that Venli has discovered storm form, and this is potentially where they got the ideas of storm form was from this stanza. Like the only reason why they even know that a storm form is possible is from this song, right?
Right.
So
right.
It's great that we get to read it because, you know, we know that it's actually a factor. A lot of these other ones that we've read, you know, mediation form, art form, we know that there's they were mentioned in those Eshonai chapters or Eshonai interludes. But this one's really the one that we should be thinking about more, because this is their goal, is to get this, right?
Is to get this thing, yeah. And it seems to be a loose cannon, too, in terms of what it's capable of doing
for those who
possess it.
And this gives us a little bit of an idea of why Eshonai might be a little bit hesitant about it, because beware its power, beware its power.
Yeah, you know? Twice it said.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... But, you know, it really makes you question, like, Stormform, like, does Kaladin already possess this? Do others in Roshar, do others possess this form without having to be a listener?
Oh, you're implying that do others have the abilities of Stormform without actually needing to change? Because it seems like the listeners need to...
Well,
the listeners need a change, right? In order for them to take on a new form, they're actually changing physically, right?
Yeah, they do change
sometimes, personality-wise as well. We know that there's
perhaps different beings manifest storm form differently.
Right.
Perhaps with the listeners, they manifest it not only in abilities, but also in physical characteristics.
Right.
But perhaps others exhibit it or use it or channel it in different ways.
Right.
I don't know.
Hmm.
I'm just thinking out loud.
The other thing, too, I want to point out is Blood Red Spren.
Yeah.
This is not the first time that we've been hearing of a Red Spren. We actually get it, like, almost immediately in this chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a nice segue to get into it here.
Spren.
Unless you have anything else you want to get into it?
No, I mean, really, that's it. Like, yeah. I mean, it's full of mystery, but I think, you know, God's their knight. I took that maybe to be their end.
Mm-hmm.
The listeners already seem to be wanting that. And, you know, perhaps that's what the great fight is going to be, is this, you know, breaking away from the gods. Maybe it's, you know, the gods that they all might need to get away from.
Right.
Or perhaps just godlike power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kaladin is at the window shutters.
Mm-hmm.
He can hear a distant howling, the wind passing through some hollow. Wasn't nearby, though. Then the wood rattles wickedly in its frame. And he sees flashes of light.
Mm-hmm.
Glistening through drops of water, and there's another flash. And then he sees something faintly red.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, he couldn't explain it.
Like glowing spheres.
Glowing spheres, but he had the impression that they were eyes.
Right.
And transfixed on this, he raised his hand toward the latch to open it and see on these shutters. And then he's abruptly interrupted by the king, by King Elokar, who says, "Someone really needs to fix those loose shutters."
Mm-hmm.
The light fades, the rattling stops, and Kaladin blinks and lowers his hand. He's had a vision.
A vision?
Well,
or
he's standing there. He's hearing this howling wind.
Mm-hmm. We know that...
It says the wood is rattling wickedly, like, and then he's seeing this red.
Right.
He's seeing the flashes. I get it that the high storm is out there, it's occurring, but seeing the red, like, I don't know, I read into it that he was seeing something that the others could not have seen.
That's very possible. I hesitate to use the word vision, though, because we equate vision with what Dalinar is going
Dalinar
through.
What Dalinar is experiencing.
Yeah, yeah, so I think that what he saw outside those shutters was possibly there, and he was the only one seeing it. But that's right. Not that he was having a, like, hallucination or some kind of dreamlike vision. There is a high storm out there, and there is...
Right,
and later
there
on,
is.
he thinks about the storm again. He's like, did I really see what I saw in that storm, that face? So, like...
Right, the face.
He's referring
yeah, yeah.
to the,
so
the
maybe
storm that's
maybe
out there,
he just,
right?
He may be just, again, experiencing it differently.
Right. Right.
You know, like he's seeing things that
he's
others
definitely,
don't.
He's definitely tapped into something that others aren't, so for sure.
And then Elokar says, "Someone remind me to ask Nikal to see to it. The shutter shouldn't leak. This is my palace, not a village tavern."
Mm-hmm.
And Adeline says, "We'll make sure it's seen to." So he's there by the hearth with his brother.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get a rundown here of who's all here in this in this
Renarin
room.
Renarin is there, and I like that he's got this small box out of his pocket. He's turning it over and over repeatedly, opening it and shutting it. And he did that over and over, Renarin did.
You know what it made me think of? It made me think of a Zippo. And like not Zippo. A Zippo, but what you would do with a Zippo lighter. You know how people play with their Zippos? They open it, they close it, they open it, they close it. It's slightly annoying, but like also cool if you're like, you know, in a cool 50s movie or something, if you're James Dean or something. But like, that's what I felt like when I read that. I was like, oh, he's
opening and closing.
Yeah, he's like fidgeting kind of. He's using it as a fidget toy a little bit.
It's his fidget spinner.
Yeah, it's his fidget spinner. It's a it's a balloon filled with rice.
It's a balloon filled. He's just shaking.
Parents who have kids that need fidget toys understand that joke. That's an easy fix.
He needs a stress ball.
Yeah.
Elokar is pacing, and Edrin is the head of the Kingsguard. He's standing near. He's got green eyes, dark skin. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit Aes-ish and has a full beard. Kaladin is impressed with Edrin, though, and his team.
Mm-hmm.
So he, and it says here that on the last, when there's been a plateau run, Edrin would turn toward them and his expression would grow longing. He wanted to be out there fighting.
Yeah. It's like he misses
it. It says here, he misses it, but not only that he misses it, Sadeas's betrayal, it says here, had made a lot of the soldiers in camp similarly eager, as if they wanted the chance to prove how strong Dalinar's army was.
Right.
So I like that there appears to be in the ranks amongst Dalinar's men, through Edrin being, you know, the head of this guard, anyways, of the Kingsguard, that they want to prove that they're just as strong and can withstand anything Sadeas can throw against them.
Right. Like they're eager to prove, you know, you might have bested us, but we're not weak.
Right. And it also kind of shows that, you know, Sadeas's betrayal, it's had an echo sort of effect in the armies. And it's not just Dalinar and his sons who are calculating. It's also the men.
The men.
Like they feel, you know what, Sadeas, come on, bring it on.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they want redemption,
so
right?
I kind of like that.
Yeah,
that's
me
cool.
too. Yeah, I like it a lot, actually.
So the barracks, okay, so it says more rumbling came from outside. So there is a high storm, you know, going on outside, which obviously is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
The barracks always felt chilly, but this room was well heated, but not by a fire.
Yeah, Kaladin thinks it's weird that he's like experiencing a high storm and not being cold.
Not being cold,
right.
Yeah.
But it's because like, this room is heated
and this
by
room,
this thing, right?
Yeah, this ruby, right?
Yeah.
But he does note here, again, I like the way he's always thinking like this. He sees the ruby, and the hearth, it holds it, and his one of his thoughts is that could have paid to feed everyone in his hometown for weeks.
Yeah. It's because he comes from, he doesn't come from means, so he sees that and goes,
right.
Wow, like... Think of
like
the good
that,
I could do with that ruby.
Right.
And these six, you know, people like are using it for warmth, right?
Right.
Yeah.
A few people.
Yeah,
or
whatever.
Using
yeah,
it,
yeah.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's the altruism, it's the idealism. You know, like it's still inherent in the character, which is good. That gives me hope.
Yeah.
But it's the unraveling that makes me very nervous.
It's also another one of those moments where he shows us the difference between classes, between light eyes and dark eyes, right?
Yeah.
Like,
Kaladin leaves the window and goes toward, he's heading toward Adeline, because Adeline is inspecting what looks to be, you know, a book.
Yeah.
And he kind of saunters over, pretending that he's interested in the gemstone, the ruby, but he really wanted to look at what Adeline was reading. And it says here that many men have refused to look at books, considering it unmasculine, but Adeline didn't seem to be bothered by that. And that made Kaladin very curious.
I really like this. It's like one of these first moments, other than maybe when Kaladin like had a little respect for Adeline about like saving the prostitute on the street or whatever. This is another moment where he's all like, oh, like, you know, he's unbothered by what people think of him. And I like that a lot. It's an endearing quality for Aladdin to have, you know? Yeah, I like fashion.
No, I mean,
deal. You
big
know?
Deal. I like it.
I like to look at books. I'm sure it's unmasculine, but big fucking deal. Adolin's a little
big
woke.
Deal.
He's Adolin's woke.
He's well. Adolin is just like, you know, I like what I like, and that's it.
That's it.
Too fucking bad.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the first Spice Girls album. Fuck you if you don't.
Yeah,
I don't care.
I rock the Spice Girls. Come on.
Jeez.
Tell me what I want, or tell me what you want.
What I really want.
Dalinar and Avani have retired. Kaladin, it says here, wanted to put a guard inside, but they had refused. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Good for them.
Yeah.
Get some alone time, guys.
Yeah.
There's not even a window in that area, so he feels that it's pretty safe, because he's like, look, there's no window in the room that they are in, so
right.
If anything does happen, I should be covered.
Yeah, I should be able to see someone go in there. But mm-hmm. we know why they're in there. Because there's a high storm, so we know that Dalinar's having a vision, and then Avani's in there to record it, and they didn't want anyone else in there. So they're still trying to keep this as much of a secret as possible. We have to assume that Adolin and Renarin know. I don't know if we know about the visions. Yeah, we know that they know because they've been in the room with him.
Well,
does Elokar know?
People, I think, you know what? I think it's out. Like, the men know that there are, that Dalinar is having fits.
Okay, but maybe not to the extent
of what the visions are showing.
I don't think Elokar knows really fully what's going on.
Idrin, the Kingsguard,
probably doesn't know at all. He probably knows there's fits, like you say, but doesn't know like the actual stuff. And we know for
unless
sure
someone is telling Elokar.
That's true.
Someone could be telling him,
right? So, and we definitely know that Kaladin does not know, because he's starting to learn a little bit about what's going on through this chapter. There are these little nuggets that keep getting dropped for him. So
Kaladin's looking at the ruby in the hearth, and this is kind of neat. It says here that the light inside of it, it should have blinded him, but instead he could stare at it in depths and see the light moving inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it says a little further, if you look deeply into a gemstone, you could see the light shifting with the chaotic pattern of a blowing storm.
Yeah.
It was not calm inside, not by a wind or a whisper.
Kind of like this. It's like a metaphor for Kaladin himself, right? He seems calm, but he's got this rush of emotions
inside,
all the time. And
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's it, exactly. I think, I don't know. I'm still... Let's see what's to come. Renarin says, have you never seen a heating fable before? No, I haven't, Kaladin says. It's new technology. My aunt built that one herself. Every time I turn around, it seems the world has changed somehow. Kaladin says, I know how that feels.
That's a really great line from Renarin. I feel like this is like a metaphor for this whole book, right? We thought we knew, like you've said this before, you thought you understood what you were dealing with. And then this book started and you're like, holy shit. Every time I turn around, it seems like the world has changed somehow. Every time you read a new chapter. Every time you get more information.
Shades Mar, like, come on.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Part of him yearned to suck in the light of that gemstone. So here we go. Kaladin is looking at this red ruby and he's thinking, I would like to suck it in right now.
It's so foolish, much energy, though. It's so much stormlight.
A foolish move. He says there'd be enough in there to make him glow like a bonfire.
Oh, yeah, dude. There'd be no hiding.
He lowered his hands and strolled past Adolin's chair. But again, like, it's, you know, he wanted to suck it in, and it gives him power. So it's, you know, that's indicative, I think, you know, it's like, I want power.
They haven't really said this yet, but I could totally see if Sanderson had chosen to make breathing in stormlight as a metaphor for drugs. You know what I mean? Like...
But he hasn't gone there.
And as far as I know in this, so far what we've read, he's not equating it to that at all. But in this moment where he's like, he sees it and he's like, oh, I'd love to have that all inside me right now. It made me feel like he could have taken this series in a different way and made people addicted to this, right? Like, he could have made people addicted to the power of Stormlight.
I'm going to equate this a little bit to perhaps the Highlander. Now, of course, I'm referring to the movie series, but when they each destroy, or I guess, you know, kill another another one of the, because there can only be one.
There can only be one.
They absorb all of this power. And I find, and it's described as, like there's a component to it, I think, in the Highlander sort of mythos, that it's like a quickening that right. happens within you.
That's right.
Right? So that, I find, is, I guess, a component of maybe what Kaladin is desiring. He's desiring that quickening, that power, that mm-hmm. surge, mm-hmm. right? So it's perfectly natural. It's just, I just worry that desire to restrain yourself from doing it may wear away.
Right.
So the sketches in Adeline's book were of men in fine clothing. The drawings were quite good. Their faces done in as much detail as their garments. And Kaladin just blurts out, "Fashion? You're spending the high storms looking for new clothing?" Adeline snaps the book closed. "But you only wear uniforms," Kaladin says. "Do you need to be here, Bridge Boy?" Adeline demands. "Surely nobody is going to come for us during a high storm of all things."
Yeah.
The fact that you assume that is why I need to be here. What better time would there be for an assassination attempt? The winds would cover shouts and help would be slow in coming. When everyone is taking cover to wait out the storm, seems to me this is one of the best times when His Majesty most needs his guards. And the king pipes in, "That makes sense. Why hasn't anyone else ever explained that to me?" And he looks at Edrin. It's quiet.
This is like a common reoccurring thing here where Kaladin pipes up and the king's like, "Hey, yeah, I like this. Oh, yeah. Why didn't anybody ever explain it to me like this before?" Like he, you know, every time Kaladin says something, the king's like, "Yeah, that's right."
So it's either Elokar is playing along and playing him, or it's that no one bothers to explain strategy to him.
Yeah, or even like to just talk openly about stuff, right? Like mm-hmm. Kaladin is literally not biting his lip, like biting his tongue. You know, he's not stopping himself from talking openly. So when he does, right. the king likes it.
"You could at least leave Renarin and me out of it," says Adeline. "It's easier to protect you when you're all together, right, Lord? Plus, you can defend each other." So I got to agree with Kaladin on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're right. This is the part where he's like, you know, had I really seen the things that I've seen in the storms?
Right.
That face as vast as the sky, the Stormfather himself. "I am a god," Silid said. "A little piece of one."
Yeah.
See, you know, that supports my theory of the whole, like, Spren being, like, shattered components.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if it supports it, but it's definitely on Kaladin's mind. He's definitely trying to he's trying to put the pieces together. Heyo.
Yeah, there you go. Right. So mm-hmm. I am a god. Silid said she had said that.
Mm-hmm. She did.
And then a little piece of one. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's cool.
Eventually the storm passes. Kaladin opens up the window to a black sky, phantom clouds shining with Noman's light. Noman, the moon, the mm-hmm. second moon?
Second moon, yeah.
He hated when I had to put an asterisk here. I want to talk about this. He hated when a high storm came so late.
Mm-hmm.
He often felt exhausted the next day.
Yeah, because the storms are so fucking loud that it wakes everybody up.
Okay.
See, like it says, the storm had started a few hours into the night, but nobody could sleep during a storm because they're so fucking loud, they wake everybody up. So when there is a high storm in the middle of the night, he's saying he felt exhausted the next day, but everyone else is also exhausted the next day because they're just not sleeping.
Okay, so what I read into that is that, you know, he hated a high storm when it came so late. He often felt exhausted. I kind of interpret it like, you know, that he's exhausted because he's causing it.
He's causing the storms?
Yeah, the high storms. Now, I know that he's not, you know, maybe literally in this moment causing the high storms. Right. I'm just saying it just sort of like feels like, you know, an event happens and you're tired. It kind of sort of, it feels like a connection.
He's definitely seems to be connected.
He's drained or he's tired. It's like, well, are you causing this damage? Like, like this damage that comes, these gales, these storms that keep coming and coming, we're all in some way, maybe responsible. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm just shooting at.
Yeah, that's cool. I just thought about that. I mean, there is evidence that he's connected to the storms. I mean, I would support theories like this because that's what we do. But I mean, he rode at the head of a high storm that literally crossed all of Roshar in one of his dreams.
Right.
When he was strung up in a high storm, he saw the face of the Storm Father.
Right.
He was able to survive it. So yeah, he's definitely connected to the high storms somehow, or at the very least, he's able to, whatever it is that he can do, has some kind of connection to high storms.
It just kind of felt like, you know, the storm's over and then he's exhausted and then maybe he just doesn't know that it's him.
Right.
Or that there's this link. I just kind of like thinking about that, where like he's living, you know, he's living as Kaladin, he's living as, you know, the surgeon and the soldier and the spearman and the bridge four and the betrayal and everything. He's living this experience and yet this storm is ongoing and happening, and it just, I don't know. There just sort of seemed to be a tie there to me.
I fully support your theory rants completely. I also think that he wakes up in the middle of the night when there's a high storm and then can't get back to sleep because high storms last for how long they last, and then your sleep is all chopped up and you're just exhausted. Like, literally, yeah. I have a high storm waking me up every night called Nora, my 8-year-old, because she doesn't fucking sleep. So I'm exhausted the next day, too.
Right.
But Dalinar and Navani come out of the side room eventually
here. They come out, and she's got her notebook,
yeah.
So you were right that she's recording it. Oh, yeah, there's a clue here, guys. Sean, yeah. I got to talk to you about this. Mm-hmm. So his men were divided on the topic of the High Prince's fits. Some thought Dalinar was frightened of high storms and his terror sent him into convulsions, whereas others whispered that with age, the Blackthorn was just losing his mind.
Right.
So the men do know about the fits, not the content or the specifics, but they know about it, but differing opinions still persist.
Yeah, exactly. But they don't know... They don't know what... They don't know about visions. They just know about either he's losing his mind, you know. And this whole... The whole first book was... Not the whole, but quite a lot of the first book was, is he losing his mind? You know what I mean? We didn't know how real the visions were until they proved that the visions were real, right? So they walked line quite a bit in that first book, so...
They walked the line. Numbers, Sir Kaladin says. Now he's concerned about these glyphs, right?
The scratchings or whatever.
The scratchings. And he says, no, there were none. Sometimes they come just after the storm, Kaladin says. I have men in the hall outside. I would prefer it if everyone remained here for a short time. As you wish, soldier. So he's referring to him as soldier here.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Kaladin walked to the exit. Beyond, some men of the bridge four and the King's Guard stood watch. Kaladin nodded to Leighton, then pointed for them to watch out in the balcony. Mm-hmm. Kaladin would catch the phantom scratching those numbers, so he's wanting to catch the perpetrator of this.
Yeah.
He's not going to let it go.
It's like, I totally understand why, because he's in charge. He's literally in charge of the safety of all these people, and someone keeps getting past him to write these scratches on the wall or something. Because remember he said, could it be a Spren? Remember he had that conversation with Syl?
Yeah.
So he, it's bugging him, I think. It's really fucking bugging him that he's not caught it yet.
He's not going to let it go.
Yeah.
Renarin and Adolin approach their father. Anything new? Renarin asks. No, Dalinar says. The vision was a repeat, but they're not coming in the same order as last time. And some are new, so perhaps there is something to learn we have not yet discovered. Noticing Kaladin, he trailed off and then changed the topic. Okay, so this I want to talk about. So I feel that there, because of, I sense a change in Dalinar's treatment of Kaladin.
Okay.
Okay.
Because he called him soldier, not captain?
Because he called him soldier, you know, he changes the topic. Like, at the start, it seemed that when Kaladin joined, you know, his ranks, there was absolute trust.
Right.
You know, 100% trust. Mm-hmm. Now, why after this episode he's quiet?
Right.
He could have seen, and I've already, and because I read this chapter, And I already thought, oh boy, you know, Kaladin's like, you know, because they're using words like anger, like Brandon Mr. Sanderson's dropping, I think he's dropping hints. He's using words like anger. Like he's feeling this thing inside of him. He's even later on when he's talking with Dalinar, he's almost like biting his lip. He's clenching his teeth. He's, you know, forming fists. Mm-hmm. Like he's, you know, that's unglued behavior.
Right.
It's, you're not in control here, bud. You know, so like for me, this I think is something. I think this is a hint or could be a hint that the vision that he just had could have been about Kaladin.
Hmm.
And it might not have been, it might not have been all that great. So
says the vision was a repeat.
I know that's what he said, but
okay. I'm just saying. So if that's true and it was a repeat, that means that with your theory that he must have had multiple visions about Kaladin.
Perhaps, I don't know.
Do you think that Dalinar should be telling Kaladin about the visions? You know, he's been, Cal's been very helpful a few times with, like, you know, advice. And he tells him as well, like, you know, at the beginning of this book, he's like, you know, I want you to be here for when we talk about the proclamation because it's important for you to know what's going on
right,
to protect
right.
me properly. But this is something that he's holding back.
Does Dalinar know of Kaladin's capabilities?
No. No. They're literally both not talking to each other about stuff.
So because of that, I don't think that Dalinar should share with Kaladin. Mm-hmm. Basically, to Dalinar, Kaladin is a miracle who saved his army and saved him
right.
on the battle after Sadeas's betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a miracle. He's a, you know, formidable warrior. He's someone I can trust with my, you know, like, that is really where Kaladin is at.
Right.
Okay. Now, if Dalinar knew about his capabilities and where he might fit in with this grander story, this epic that's about to unfold, you know, taking into account all the things that are going on,
right.
Yasin's investigation, mm-hmm. like everything.
Everything, yeah.
You know, so if he knew, then perhaps Kaladin might have a part in this whole epic story and you might want to bring him in on these visions.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But because he doesn't know right now, mm-hmm. I would say no, he probably should withhold
right.
from Kaladin.
I like, you know, we've talked a lot about these parallel lines that these two characters were on during Way
yeah.
of Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to a head at the end at the tower. And now they're kind of on the same line again where they both have a secret that they should
yeah.
probably be telling each other, but they're not telling each other. You know, if Cal told Dalinar about what he could do, and if Dalinar told Cal about what he's been seeing, they might actually be able to help each other out, but they're both, one, afraid of what it could mean,
mm-hmm.
right? And Dalinar might be still a little embarrassed by it, and we know Kaladin is worried that it's going to be taken away from him. So,
right.
So yeah, they're at, almost like at an impasse right now. Who will blink first?
Well, I think, yeah, it's who's, well, I mean, Kaladin blinks a little bit. He winks at least.
Yeah.
Because he brings up a very difficult subject
later
to
on.
Dalinar.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
But let me ask you, of this topic, of Kaladin's capabilities with Stormlight and Dalinar's visions, who's going to find out the other person's secret first? Who do you think? Will it be Dalinar finding out about Kaladin's powers or Kaladin finding out about Dalinar's visions first?
I think at this point, because Kaladin has no in finding out about Dalinar's visions.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really know Navani. He's not really, you know, speaking with her in any kind of intimate sort of way. And neither is he going to get that information out of the brothers, it seems, because Kaladin's relationship with the brothers remains, you know,
pretty sketchy.
At
yeah.
arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Adeline, it's very.
So you're saying it's more likely that Dalinar will find out about Kaladin before Kaladin finds out about Dalinar?
I would say so, yeah.
I think
yeah.
so. I think that makes sense because Kaladin exhibits an actual physical image of what, like, if he breathes in Stormlight in the wrong moment, Dalinar
right.
might see him glow and then that's over, right?
Right. And it's over.
But Dalinar, over. Yeah. you know, is never going to have a vision in front of Kaladin. Maybe not though. Maybe he will. I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll just have to keep reading
we'll
see. And
see. I mean, yeah, we'll have to keep reading. Okay. Let's keep at it.
Yeah.
So he says, Adeline, when can we expect more duels? And Adeline's like, well, I'm trying, but I thought after beating Salinor that would drive others to want to try me, but they're stalling. Navani says, it's problematic. Weren't you always saying that everyone wanted to duel you? And Adeline's like, well, they did. But when I couldn't duel, at least, now every time I make an offer, people start shuffling their feet and looking away. Have you tried anyone in Sadius's camp? The king asks eagerly. No, but he's only got one shardbearer other than himself, Amram. Now, okay, I did want to put a little asterisk there. Have you tried someone in Sadius's camp? The king asks eagerly. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That could be the king setting up Adeline. Here, try this. Try someone in Adeline's, in Sadius's camp. Oh, it's so and so. Oh, he's going to beat you in some way.
Could be
a setup.
Could be.
Again, I'm just suspicious of everybody, so I'm just trying to.
You are
trying to read it.
You are.
No, Adeline says, but he's only got one shardbearer other than himself, Amram. Kaladin felt a shiver. Well, you won't be dueling him, Dalinar says. And Navani, I like this little bit of
hand on the knee.
Yeah, her hand is it says hand fondly on his knee. Which
do you think she's gonna play chicken with him? Are you chicken?
Yeah, maybe.
Are you chicken?
Are you chicken?
Are you chicken?
I like this little bit. Just a little bit of emotion and tenderness shown between the two of them. It's nice. We might have him on our side. Talking about Amram. I've been speaking to High Lord Amram. You think you can get him to secede? The king asks. Is that possible? Kaladin blurts in here.
He's a blurter, just like you.
Just interjects. And Dalinar looks to him and says, yes, it's possible. Most of the territory that Amram oversees would remain with Sadius, but he could bring his personal land in my princedom, along with his shards. Usually it requires a land trade with a princedom bordering the one a High Lord wishes to join. Adeline says, yeah, but it hasn't happened in over a decade. I'm working on him, Dalinar says, but Amram, he wants to bring Sadius and me closer together instead. He thinks we can get along again. Adeline snorts, that possibility blew away the day Sadius betrayed us.
Mm-hmm.
To which Dalinar replies, probably long before that day, even if I didn't see it. Is there anyone else you could challenge, Adeline? I'm going to try Talonor, and then Kalashor.
Yeah, these two dudes are not cutting it, though, right?
No.
Neither of them are full shardbearer.
Neither shardbearer, says Navani, yeah.
Yeah, because Adeline's like, full shardbearers have literally refused me.
Right.
Like, no one wants to fight.
Right.
And then they're like, well, he said, well, they wanted to fight me before when I couldn't fight.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But now that he's shown such a display, like, I don't know.
Right. No one wants to mess with him.
Actually, what I think it also could be, no one wants to mess with him because they could be part of it that only certain people are to duel with Adeline so that he can be beaten.
Right.
That could support my, you know what I mean?
Could support all your theories, every single theory.
Those two are eager,
supported.
It says, thirsty for notoriety. One of them might agree where the others haven't. Kaladin is, he folds his arms, and if you defeat them, won't it scare off others from fighting you? When I beat them, he interjects.
Yeah.
Father will maneuver others into agreeing to duels, Kaladin says, but it will have to stop sometime, right? I mean, eventually...
I like this point right here.
Yeah.
This is a really good point.
Eventually, the other High Princes will realize what's happening. They'll refuse to be goaded into further duels. It might be happening already. That's why they don't accept. Someone will, Adeline says. And once I start winning, others will begin to see me as a real challenge. They'll want to test themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Kaladin is right. So he goes back to calling him Captain, which is better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's coming from...
This is the distinction, right? He talked to Kaladin, called him Soldier. Mm-hmm. He's talking about Kaladin to everyone else. He uses his honorific, Captain Kaladin. So there's a difference in the use of what he said. He didn't call him, he didn't say Captain to him. He called him Soldier because he's one of my soldiers.
Right.
But when talking about him to others, he called him Captain.
Which is
an important distinction, I think.
Yeah, I almost wish he would call him Captain all the time.
Captain
there's no need to,
Kaladin!
There's no need to fight with every shardbearer in camp, Dalinar says. We need to narrow our attack. Choose duels that you could point us toward the ultimate goal, which is, Adeline asks, to undermine Sadius. killing him in a duel if we have to. Everyone in camp knows the sides in this power struggle. This won't work if we punish everyone equally. We need to show those in the middle, those deciding whom to follow, the advantages of trust, cooperation on plateau runs, help from one another, help from one another's shard bearers. We show them what it's like to be part of a real kingdom.
Right. This makes a lot of sense because, like, if they just start taking shards from people who could potentially be allies of theirs, it'll make them harder to become allies with them.
Right.
Whereas if they go after people that are clearly aligned with Sadeas, then it undermines his ability and his allies' abilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it might bring the people who are actually closer to the king in Dalinar closer to them because now they're amassing all this power through shards. So it's actually a pretty smart thing to think about. Let's not fight everybody. Let's fight specific people tactically who will give us the better chance of trying to get Sadeas.
Right. Yeah.
Because you don't want to scare everybody off, right?
No.
Kaladin makes a good point. The more you fight, the more you win, the less likely people are going to want to fight you.
Right. Yeah.
So they got to pick their spots. They can't just go, we're going to take all the shards.
Yeah.
Because that's a really nice, lofty goal. But you, in the duel, someone has to agree to fight you. So you almost have to, like, poke the bear on the other side. Get the guys you want.
Yeah.
To get not everyone. You don't want to fight the guy who is actually quite sympathetic with your side, right?
I think Adolin is like he's up for anything though. I think he would just
he's chomping
he's
at
just
bit.
Like line them up and I'll take them down. Kaladin found himself annoyed at all this. He's thinking, why should he be? Dalinar had agreed with him. He stewed for a moment and realized that he was probably still upset because someone had mentioned Amaram. Even hearing the man's name put Kaladin out of sorts. He kept thinking something should happen, something should change now that such a murderer was in camp, yet everything just kept going on. It was frustrating, and it made him want to lash out.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So
it makes sense.
Well, yeah.
You know,
it's just...
It makes sense.
I assume you've waited long enough, Adolin says. I can go? Dalinar nods. And Adolin opens up the door. Renarin follows him. And Scar and three others go to protect him.
Yeah, so that's their duty, their guard duties with the boys.
Then Kaladin asks Moash how long he's been on duty, and he's been on a little bit too long, and he's thinking, I'm working these guys too hard, so he's trying to give them, you know, some breaks, and then he says, I want you to head back and get some sleep. You too, Bizzig.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that you were on this shift this morning. And you, Moash says, I'm fine. You've got to be at least as tired as I am, Cal.
Yeah.
I'll go back in a bit, Kaladin says. And I think it's interesting there that Moash is like, I can call him Cal.
Right.
You can call me Eddie.
You can call me Eddie?
But you can call me Al. Remember that song?
No. No.
Okay.
I don't.
It shows my age. It's a Paul Simon Chevy Chase video. You can call me Cal? No? Okay.
So, yeah, I like this here where Moash, challenges him again and says, you know, like, sure, it's okay to be worried about our, like, sleep and our, you know, rest, but you got to think about yourself, too, you know? And so Moash ends up saying, he's like, he has to pull two shifts because he's on duty with the Kingsguard.
Right.
Because Cal wants them to learn from the Kingsguard. He says it was important. Moash needed to think like a bodyguard, and there was no better way than serving on an already established
crew. Yeah, yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense, right? Train with the best.
Train.
If you want to be the best, you got to train with the best.
Yep.
But Moash ends up saying, my shift here is almost done. I'll head back afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And then he says to him, says to Kaladin, then you'll get some sleep? And he says, yes, fine, I'll get some sleep. I'll head back after. Sir, there's something I need to talk to you about. So this is Kaladin coming up to Dalinar.
To Dalinar,
and Dalinar says, well, can it wait until I'm done here? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'll wait at the palace's front doors then. I'll be your guard on the way back to camp. So the servants have already come to open the windows and the corridors, and Syl floats in through one of these windows as a spinning swirl of mist. She's giggling and spinning around before going out another window. She's always more Spren-like during a high storm.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah, it's really cute.
The whole world felt cleaner after a high storm, scrubbed by nature's abrasive. I like that. Nature's abrasive. I thought that was a nice pairing. Mm-hmm. So he reached the front gates of the palace. Kingsguard is standing watch, and he's getting crisp salutes. I like that, too.
Yeah. Crisp. Which is this continuation of what happened before in the camps and stuff, right? Yeah.
Okay, so Dalinar appears...
Eventually, yeah.
Dalinar appears deeply distracted by something. He hasn't ever announced anything about his fits during high storms, Kaladin thought. Shouldn't he say something? They talked about visions earlier. What was it that Dalinar saw or thought he saw?
So Cal's getting these little nuggets, right?
Yeah.
Like he knows now that something's happening. Dalinar probably, like we said earlier, probably regrets Cal even hearing the word visions.
Right.
But, I mean, that's the way it is, right?
Yeah, and perhaps if conversations between Dalinar continue to happen, between Dalinar and Kaladin, maybe Kaladin will get the story from Dalinar. Maybe Dalinar will trust him.
Right, the more time he spends with them, right?
Right.
At the end of the next chapter, he blatantly asks him, can I trust you?
Right, he does, yeah.
And I feel like this is like a stepping stone towards that, right?
So a soldier, Dalinar says, what is it you wanted to discuss?
This is big time, dude. This is big stuff here.
A year ago, I was a soldier in Amaram's army. So that's where you learned, Dalinar said. I should have guessed. Amaram is the only general in Sadeus' princedom with any real leadership ability. Sir, Kaladin said, stopping on the steps, he betrayed me and my men. Dalinar stopped and turned to look at him. A poor battle decision, then? Nobody's perfect, soldier. If you sent your men into a bad situation, I doubt he intended to do so. Just push through it, Kaladin told himself, noticing Syl sitting on a shalebark ridge to the right. She nodded at him. He has to know. He'd never spoken of this, not in full, not even to Rock, Teft, and the others. It wasn't that, sir, Kaladin said, meeting Dalinar's eyes by sphere light. I know where Amaram got his shard blade. I was there. I killed the shard bearer carrying it. That can't be the case, Dalinar said slowly. If you had, you'd hold the plate and blade. Amaram took it for himself and then slaughtered everyone who knew the truth, Kaladin said. Everyone but a lone soldier who, in his guilt, Amaram branded a slave and sold rather than murdering. Dalinar stood in silence. Amaram is one of the best men I know, Dalinar said. His honor is spotless. I've never even known him to take undue advantage of an opponent in a duel, despite cases when it would have been acceptable. Kaladin didn't respond. He'd believed that too at one point.
You know who else believed that too at one point? You did.
I did.
They do a really good job of making his character seem spotless, like this really shining example of what a light eyes is supposed to be. Right. So when the betrayal comes, it's hard to take. And Dalinar's having a hard time taking it too. Mm-hmm. Now, he's getting it secondhand. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Like, well, my hope was that when Kaladin started to exhibit in Way of Kings, when he started to, you know, unveil, I guess, to the reader that Amaram had betrayed them, and he had all these, you know, hostile sort of feelings towards him, I thought, well, perhaps there's more to the story. And I thought, maybe, despite Amaram's betrayal, I thought that he was trying to protect him. That's what I thought.
Are we going down this road again? Are we seriously talking about your Amaram theory?
Yeah, because that's what I thought. So I never thought that Amaram was spotless because of what was mentioned about him. I mean, Kaladin, I think, expressed that he admired him. You know, he was happy to be in the army. He had hope just in being a soldier. Like, that was enough for him. But I don't know if it was necessarily painting about Amaram. When the betrayal happened, yes, it seemed really, really bad. It was brutal. And of course, that's when I knew that I was completely wrong. Of course, was when it unfolded the way it did.
Of course.
Right? So then I knew, okay, well, there's no way this can be true.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, but I gotta say, I
hope one day we get to this pod where you just won't mention
that
Amaram's betrayal ever again. Yeah, just it'd be nice, you know, like.
Well, I can't promise you that. Actually, I can. I can promise you that if you'll stop doing the Renarin voice.
No, there's no way.
You had so many opportunities.
I let you read as Renarin earlier.
You had so many opportunities.
I know, but I let you read as Renarin, and I didn't even stop you. I didn't even reread it. No, I didn't do it. I'm leaving that one alone.
No, you should have done it. Amaram took it for himself and slaughtered everyone. Amaram is one of the best men I know. Do you have any proof? Do you have any proof? You understand that I can't take one man's word on something of this nature. One dark man's word, you mean? Mm-hmm. It's not the color of your eyes that's the problem. It's the severity of your accusation. The words you speak are dangerous. Do you have any proof, soldier? There were others there when he took the shards. Men of his personal guard did the actual killing at his command. And there was a storm warden there, middle-aged, with a peaked face. He wore a beard like an ardent. They were all complicit in the act. But maybe, have you spoken this accusation to anyone else? No. Continue to hold your tongue. So I'm very suspicious of this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that asks you, like, not to share, mm-hmm. that's puts you in a position of power.
Right.
So I don't know if I like that even Dalinar asked him to keep his, you know, tongue on this matter.
Right.
So I'll talk to Amaram. Thank you for telling me this. Sir, Kaladin says...
Like, if you really believe in justice... Right. Yeah. If you really believe in justice, you... And then he's like, that's enough for the moment, son.
Right. Yeah.
You've had your say unless right. you can offer me anything else by the way of evidence. And truthfully, he can't. He can't offer any evidence.
Right. Kaladin forced down his immediate burst of anger. It was difficult. So, you know, it's just... It must be so hard for Kaladin to... You know, to have all of this memory, all this knowledge, this betrayal so fresh, and then, you know, it's just no one believes him. Not even the man that, you know, he probably should trust the most.
Yeah, the person you'd think that might believe him.
I appreciated your input when we were talking about my son's duels earlier, Dalinar says, but this is the second time you've added something important to one of our conferences, I believe. Thank you, sir. But soldier, you're walking quite a line between helpfulness and insubordination in the way you treat me and mine. You have a chip on your shoulder the size of a boulder. I ignore it because I know what was done to you. I can see the soldier beneath. That's the man I hired for this job. Yes, sir. Good, now run along. Sir, but I must escort. I think I'll return to the palace. I don't think I'll get much sleep tonight, so I might want to pester the dowager with my thoughts. Her guards can watch over me. I'll take one with me when I return to my camp. I also think maybe, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. He changes where he wants to go.
Yeah.
After Kaladin coming forward about that, about Amaram. Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I think I don't know.
Yeah. I think we're supposed to get from earlier that Dalinar and Amaram are friends. They're not just like, they're not just coworkers in like the Alethi government and all that stuff. I think that we're supposed to understand that they're friends.
Yeah.
Right? So this is definitely hard.
Dalinar was standing up above now, just a shadow. He seemed lost in thought. Syl flitted up and landed on Kaladin's shoulder and says, "See, he listened." "No, we didn't, Syl." "What?" He replied and said, "I told him everything he didn't want to hear. Even if he does..."
She's so ignorant, right?
Yeah,
she's just "Oh, wow, look, you guys talk."
"Yeah, you guys talk. Everything's perfect. Even if he does look into it, he'll find plenty of reasons to dismiss what I said. In the end, it will be my word against Amaram's. Stormfather, yeah. I shouldn't have said anything." "You'd let it go, then?" "Storms, no. I'd find my own justice." "Oh."
Yeah, here it is, eh?
Yeah, so they're still getting a little upset about that. "You're not a Skybreaker, Kaladin. You're not supposed to be like this." "A what?" "That was one of the orders, wasn't it?"
Yay, we get another name from one of the orders.
Yep.
Skybreaker.
"He did know some of some little of them. Everyone did, from the legends." "Yes," Syl says. "I'm worried about you, Kaladin. I thought things would be better once you were free from the bridges. Things are better. None of my men have been killed since we were freed. But you, I thought you might be like the person you were before. I can remember a man on a field of battle, a man who fought. That man is dead, Syl. During my time as a bridgeman, all I had to worry about was my men. Now things are different. I have to become someone. I just don't know who yet. When he reached Bridge Forest Barrack, Rock was dishing out stew. The men weren't limited to stew, but they still insisted on it. Caladan took a bowl. And
I like this.
The men were actually chatting about how they missed carrying the bridge.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's weird, eh? Yeah, they're so attached to that time.
Stew.
It's because they were reborn in those moments, right? So of course they're going to see it as like the best time of their lives. They were dead men who were reborn.
Right. Yeah. Stew and bridges. They spoke so fondly of things that had once been emblems of their captivity. Isn't that great?
Speaking fondly
about the aspects of your captivity. I mean, geez. Like,
I love this, dude. This is my highlight of the fucking chapter. So when he goes to sit down and eat a bowl and he looks over at a guy and he's like, hey, there's a dude over there. Do I know that guy? Yeah, do I know you?
Oh, don't mind Punio, Lopin says. He's my cousin. You had a cousin on the bridge crew? Nah, Lopin says. He just heard my mother say we needed more guards, so he came to help. I got him a uniform and things.
Yeah.
The newcomer.
That's okay. First off,
Punio.
Lopin is resourceful enough to just get him a uniform.
Yeah.
We had an extra one. Like, or
none.
I just went out and got one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Punio raises up his spoon. Bridge four, he says, with a thick Cardassian accent. Are you a soldier? Caladan says. Yes, Bright Lord Royon's army. Not worry. I swore to Colin instead now for my cousin. You can't just leave your army, Punio. It's called desertion. Not for us.
Yeah.
We're Herdasian. Nobody can tell us apart anyways.
Yeah.
Yes, Punio says. I leave the homeland once a year. When I come back, nobody remembers me. He shrugs. This time I come here. Caladan sighs. Fine, just pretend you were one of the bridgemen from the start, all right? Bridge four, he says. Bridge four.
I love that so much.
A man with marbled skin comes over and sits next to Caladan. This is Shen. Caladan says, Shen, sir? Continues staring at him. Is there something you wanted? And this was our dramatic read, right? So
yeah, this is what we did for the dramatic read.
So maybe
we
can skip to the end. So I am a slave.
So Shen, what do you think about this? It's
just
fucking sad, man.
Because, you know, Caladan wants to be able to offer the freedom to the men.
Right.
And he can do it for everyone except for Shen.
Yeah, Cal's the one who set up the sentimentality that he's one of us, and you'll treat him like one of us.
Right.
He's Bridge Four now. Bridge Four!
But he can't
He's
one
of us, but he can't fully do that.
No, not unless he gives him a spear.
Right.
And you know what? That's the moment I want.
Yeah, you want Shen to get a spear?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I don't want to buy into any of the propaganda about the listeners being a threat unless it's proven. If it's proven, then so be it. Then you can deal with the threat then. Everything,
I get it, dude.
Everything
I totally
hinges
get it.
On your intelligence. If your intelligence isn't there, then you need to act, I guess, according to your moral, like your ethic compass, like wherever that compass is leading you, right?
Yeah.
And putting a spear in his hands, that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Right?
I really feel bad for Shen, man. I feel him like, you know, this realization that I'm a slave then. Like, I am a slave.
I am a slave, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, a slave I am, just a living slave. And another great quote from Bridge in the River Kwai.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Bridges, slaves, Kwai.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Cal's like, you know, he has a good life, you know, for a parchment. He's got more freedom than anybody else of his kind, you know, and then he thinks to himself, was I satisfied with that? Was I satisfied to be a well-treated
slave?
Or did I try to run and fight my way to freedom? So he's like,
What a mess, man.
Yeah. So as he's sitting there, finally going to start eating his stew.
Takes a few bites.
Natum, who he left at the palace, comes running back and he's like, the king, an assassin.
That's how it ends.
That's how the chapter ends. Thank God we did these two chapters together, right?
Great chapter. This was so good.
So,
highlight?
Highlight, my friend.
Cousin.
Yeah, what's your highlight?
The cousin.
Yeah, the cousin. The cousin thing
Punio,
is great.
Punio,
I love that a lot.
It's really good. What else?
Fashion magazines.
The fashion magazine. Yeah, you know what? It's funny because there's a lot of Yeah, I'll list the fashion magazine maybe as mine. I'll join you in both of those. They're absolutely great because
they're amazing.
Because otherwise, what I'm reading into this chapter is the potential for Kaladin to go awry.
Right.
That's my concern. And I'm also concerned about others, you know, plotting, you know, scheming some more. Like, hey, have you tried dueling anybody in Sadeus's army? Like a little hint from the king. You know what I mean? Like the king has already shown that he cannot be trusted. He was the one with the whole, with the saddle incident.
The strap. Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like he's already exhibited, you know, quite very questionable behavior. What, he's just going to, he's just going to wake up and agree to everything. He's been at odds since Dalinar has taken over.
Right.
So anyways.
He can't be too happy with that either.
No.
I do like here Kaladin is involved in another conference, as Dalinar calls it, and gives good advice again. So I like that. I like these moments where Kaladin's kind of like wedging his way into this inner circle, which is really cool. And then I do like that Moash pushes back against Cal when Cal's like, hey, you look tired. And he's like,
yeah, what about
you? Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should get some rest too. Yeah. Like, so it's nice that Cal has someone to be able to kind of counterbalance this, right? He said it before. All the men revere me, but Moash doesn't, and that makes Moash my friend, not my subordinate. You know what I mean? Chapter 23, Assassin.
Night
the
form.
The epigraph. Ooh.
Yeah, this is cool. Night form.
Yeah.
Predictions what will be. Night form predicting what will be. The form of shadows mind to foresee. As the gods did leave, the night form whispered. A new storm will come someday to break. A new storm, a new world to make. A new storm, a new path to take. The night form listens.
From the Listener Song of Secrets. Mm-hmm. So that's three different songs now that they've taken these from Listener Song of Listing, Listener Song of Winds, and Listener Song of Secrets. So, it's really cool.
The night form. Mm-hmm.
It's super creepy. Predicting what will be is like definitely of the Voidbringers. We know that. You're not supposed to predict shit.
No.
But it's super creepy, dude. It's a really good one.
A new storm, a new world to make. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the king was fine. So I really like the way that these two chapters did that, that you get to the end of the previous chapter and it's just really high intensity. The king, an assassin. And then you turn the page, the king was fine. So it's just,
I like it. It's almost
really
like
great.
The right. It's almost like Brandon saying, "Don't worry, he was fine."
Yeah, I love it. Like it gives you all the tension, and then right on the next page.
Yeah, yeah, it's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, don't worry about it, everybody.
Kaladin stood gasping from the run back to the palace. Inside, Elokar, Dalinar, Navani, and both of Dalinar's sons spoke together.
Yeah. So I like here, he says that he felt like he did when his men charged the Parshendi.
Right.
You know, it's like this like weird feeling in the pit of his stomach. Like he hardly knew these people, but they were his duty. And so he felt like kind of
protectiveness.
Over them, right?
Yeah. And that extended to the light eyes, right? So.
Yeah, which it hadn't before.
Right.
And that's kind of new for him, I think.
Well, at least he ran really cool. Here, the king says. You see, Idrin, this is what a good bodyguard looks like. I bet he wouldn't have let this happen.
So feel bad for the guy.
And again, like all of these layups, it's like I just feel like it's all coordinated. So when we're talking about this assassination in this chapter, it seems like it's coordinated to get Kaladin and his men to be in charge of the king, and then something bad's going to happen, and it'd be an easy way to blame someone. Like it feels like a setup.
I think that you. I get that. I think you need to put your guard down a little.
Okay, all right.
Just a little.
All right.
Just a tiny bit.
Okay. I'll try to relax.
Because if you don't relax, then the payoffs are not going to really feel as good because you were like, all like, ugh.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. Yeah, so at least he ran here. The captain of the King's Guard stood near the door, red face. So he's looking maybe a little embarrassed here.
Yeah.
Comments like that one from the king were not going to help his men get along with Dalinar's soldiers.
No, exactly.
Right? Natam was there. He'd been on duty with the king as well as Moash. Moash, Kaladin calls. You're supposed to be back at the camp asleep. So are you.
Right.
Were you here?
I love this man. I love it so much.
Were you here when it happened? I just left, finishing my shift with the King's Guard. I heard yelling and came back as quickly as I could. Come here, have a look. He opens the balcony door. So this balcony, what a view this must be. It's an unparalleled view overlooking the war camps and the plains beyond.
Right.
So they go, and there's a section of ironwork, part of the structure that's twisted outward and is hanging precariously over the drop.
Mm-hmm.
From what we figured, Moash says, the king came out here to think, as he likes to do. Kaladin goes over to the drop.
Yeah.
And he looks. The drop was a good 100 feet onto the rocks.
Yeah.
Don't you get the feeling that, you know, he was like a bit of the wretch was coming back? Like he's looking over the precipice.
Oh, like he's looking down at the chasm? Yeah, like that's cool. I didn't think of that.
He's pausing for a moment. He's kind of thinking, you know what?
It's different, though, because he says he felt liberating. It felt liberating being so high. Like, and then he said that the heights had always fascinated him.
And he says, so, I wonder if I could survive that fall.
Right. He said he had dropped half that filled with stormlight and he had survived. Yeah. So he's thinking...
It's not really there in the text. It's just me reading. It's just me doing my thing.
No, but there was the other moment when he stood at a high point like that was at the edge of the chasm, at the honor chasm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
There's a little something there.
And Moash is like, damnation, Kaladin, are you trying to make me panic? And, like, he's wanting him to get back. Like, you know. Like,
right.
So he's...
That's how I feel when people, like, lean on their balconies and stuff when it's too high.
Oh, yeah.
I, like, actually lean backwards.
So he kneels down. You know what I like about this little chapter? It feels like Batman.
Yeah, there's definitely
detective.
The world's greatest detective. Dude, I actually wrote the words "the world's greatest detective" in my highlights because it feels like that for sure. There's an investigation going on.
Yeah, he's kneeling down. He's taking his time. He's looking at the ironwork.
I wonder if Adeline brought a date.
Yeah, because it's an investigation.
It's an assassination investigation. This is his perfect...
Yeah, exactly.
This is his perfect... This is like his venue.
There should be...
It's like taking a date to a movie or something. Like,
around.
Do you want to go see the new Shang-Chi?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go see the new assassination attempt? It's interesting.
He kneels down and he's looking at the mortared... So these sections of the railing that appear to be tampered with. The railing pulled free of its mountings, he asks? Yeah. Could just be a flaw in the design, Kaladin says. Captain, says one of the guardsmen. I was here when it happened, watching him on the balcony. It fell right out, barely a sound. I was standing here, looking out at the plains and thinking to myself, next thing I knew, His Majesty was hanging right there, holding on for his life and cursing like a caravan worker. Sir. So the king had leaned against the section of railing and it had bent forward, mountings on the bottom giving way. It had almost come free completely. But fortunately, one bar had held tight and the king had grabbed and held onto it long enough to be rescued. So that's apparently the story of what happened.
Right. And he's like, this should not have been possible.
Shaking it, he says that he found it incredibly secure. So he's, you know, testing the integrity of the rest of the railing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like how the description of it, the railing is wood with rope that had been soul cast into iron.
Right.
So when you look at it, you can see what it was made of, but it's made
of iron.
Iron
now. Yeah.
It's like what you said before about the marble. It was a wood railing,
wood.
And it was soul cast into marble.
Correct.
And it looks like wood grain, so this definitely looks like wood and rope, but soul cast into iron. I love that. I just love the ability to be able to transform something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool. It's such a cool visual, it must be.
Well, it's kind of like it's a metaphor, I think, for the series. Like, you look a certain way, but you are something else.
Right. It's really neat. Yeah. It's really awesome.
The two pieces of metal had been sheared at a joint smoothly and cleanly. Dalinar arrives and says, "In, close the door. I'd like to speak with Captain Kaladin." So he's getting the others to go away. So Moash reluctantly leaves. Dalinar walks up to Kaladin, and despite his age, I like this description, the High Prince's figure was an intimidating one, wide-shouldered like a brick wall. I love it when they remind us of the Black Thorn's, you know...
Stature?
Exactly. Like, his frame, his outline, like, he's a wall.
Wide shoulders are like Bruce Wayne's shoulders, or like Batman's shoulders, right? They're these incredibly square kind
like
of thing,
Dark
you know?
It's like the Dark Knight Returns Batman. Like, I'm this, older, brutal, like, you don't mess with me.
I can see Dalinar being the old Batman, like the...
Sure.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Sir, Kaladin says, I should have... This wasn't your fault, Dalinar says. The king wasn't under your care. Even if he was, I wouldn't reprimand you. just as I won't reprimand Edrin. I wouldn't expect bodyguards to inspect architecture. Yes, sir, Kaladin says. You like to take responsibility for things, don't you? A commendable attribute in an officer. What's your assessment? Someone definitely chipped at the mortar and sabotaged the railing. I agree. This was a deliberate attempt on the king's life. However, sir, yes. Well, whoever tried this is an idiot.
I love this. I just love this back and forth right here. It's really cool.
It's great. How could they know where the king would lean? Or even if he would? This trap could easily have caught someone else, and then the would-be assassins would have exposed themselves for nothing. In fact, that is what happened. The king survived, and now we're aware of them. We've been expecting assassins, says Dalinar. And not just because of the incident with the king's armor. Half the powerful men in the camp and are probably contemplating some kind of assassination attempt. So an attempt on Elikar's life doesn't tell us much as you'd think. As to how they knew to catch him here, he has a favorite spot for standing, leaning against the rail and looking over the shattered plains. Anyone who watches his patterns would have known where to apply their sabotage. But sir, Kaladin says, it's just so convoluted. If they have access to the king's private chambers, then why not hide an assassin inside or use poison? Well, poison is as unlikely to work as this was. The king's food and drink is always tasted. As for a hidden assassin, one might run into guards. But I agree that such methods would probably have had a greater chance of success. The fact that they didn't try it that way tells us something.
Assuming, I love this dude. Dalinar is like a step ahead of Kaladin in this investigation.
I think so.
Really great. He leads him to the answer here, right?
Assuming these are the same people who planted those flawed gemstones in the king's armor, they prefer non-confrontational methods. It's not that they're idiots. Yes, they're cowards, Kaladin realized.
Yeah.
They want to make the assassination look like an accident. They're timid. They have waited this long so that suspicion would die down. Yes, Dalinar says. This time, though, they made a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
How? Kaladin says, what cuts iron so cleanly? Dalinar leans down, inspecting the cut, and then took out a sphere of light. It's supposed to look like the joint came apart, I'd guess. And does it? Kaladin asks. No, that was a shard blade.
Right.
Narrows down our suspects a tad, I think. Don't tell anyone else. And again, don't tell anyone else. Controlling the info.
Different though.
Yeah.
This is different though.
Yep.
Because if they're the only two that know this information,
right?
He even says, "We'll hide what we noticed. It's too late to pretend, but we don't have to reveal this. Maybe gain an edge, and that's important,
right? It's too late to pretend that we think this was an accident, but we don't have to reveal anything. Yes, sir. The king is insisting that I put you in charge of guarding him. We might have to move up our timetable for that." See, the king's insisting. See, this is it. Like, it seems coordinated to me.
Well, I would say that the few times that the king has interacted with Kaladin, it's been Kaladin showing the king that he's capable. He has good advice.
I understand it makes sense. It just seems, again, it resulted in,
Kaladin being in charge of the protection of the king.
It resulted in the king not being, not dying. Like these are two things. Like the first one was done. I mean, the king did it to try to draw out the assassin. This could just as easily have been done again by the king, in my opinion.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Like it could, like, because maybe he's banking on that. Like, nobody would suspect me of doing it twice. Right.
It's quite the elaborate ruse, though, because it sounds like he was hanging literally by a thread.
Yeah.
Not literally, but
yeah.
He was hanging. Right. Like, he could have died by this. He even says later, like, surprisingly, this could have worked.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Even though it was convoluted, it could have totally worked. And it almost came close to doing. So Cal's like, I'm not ready. My men are stretched thin with the duties they already have, And then Dalinar makes a really good point here. Yep. This was done by someone on the inside. That meant a servant or one of his guards.
Yeah.
King's guard have access to his armor too.
Right.
So by removing that factor and making Cal and his people all in charge, it does kind of level things out.
I don't know who I can trust these days. Can I trust you, Kaladin Stormblessed? Yes, I swear it. Dalinar nods. I'm going to relieve Idrin of his post and assign him to a command in my army. It will sate the king, but I'll make certain that Idrin knows he isn't being punished. I suspect he'll enjoy the new command anyways. Yes, sir. I'll ask him for his best men, Dalinar says, and those will be under your command for now. Use them as little as possible. I eventually want the king being guarded only by men from the bridge crews. Men you trust.
Right.
Men who have no part in war camp politics. Choose carefully. I don't want to replace potential traitors with former thieves who can be easily bought. Yes, sir, Kaladin says, feeling a large weight settle on his shoulders. So, this is, you know, I thought that was a little telling. It feels a bit like the bridge being laid on him a little bit.
Yep, for sure. Anytime there's a weight that's brought up, for sure, it is definitely a metaphor for, the bridge is definitely a metaphor for that.
I don't know what else to do. A man needs to be able to trust his own guards. Mm-hmm. Sir, Kaladin asks, this wasn't the assassination attempt you were expecting, was it?
Yeah.
No, Dalinar says. I agree with your assessment. This wasn't the work of someone who knows what they're doing. Considering how contrived it was, I'm actually surprised at how close it came to working. If Sadeas decides to strike, or worse, the assassin who claimed my brother's life, it will not go so well for us. The storm is yet to come.
Yeah.
He pulls open the door, and you can hear Elokar ranting inside that nobody took his safety seriously. He was on a tirade.
Nobody listened,
Sounded like a whining, spoiled child. Kaladin looked at the Twisted Rail, and that was my alternate title.
Twisted Rail?
Yeah. Kaladin looked at the Twisted Rail, imagining the king dangling from it. He had good reason to be out of sorts, but then, wasn't a king supposed to be better than that? Didn't his calling demand that he be able to keep his composure under pressure? Kaladin found it difficult to imagine Dalinar reacting with such ranting, regardless of the situation. Your job isn't to judge, he told himself, waving to Syl and walking away from the balcony. Your job is to protect these people, somehow. That's the chapter.
So what do you think about all this stuff at the end here with...
Pretty good.
You know, where he says if Sadeas decides to strike or worse, the assassin claimed my brother's life, it will not go well for us.
Right.
Like, you know, Cal's like, this is convoluted. This is stupid. And what Dalinar is saying is that
if it's
one of these two other options, Sadeas or the assassin in white,
right?
If this almost worked...
Right.
This what about dumb assassination attempt almost worked.
This clumsy.
We're fucked if one of the other two try.
Right. Right. They're not in a good place. Like they.
No.
They don't have control.
Right.
But I mean, examining the architecture. I mean, like, and there's guards around all the time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to handle this kind of a threat, but Dalinar's right.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right.
He's totally right.
The threat is imminent. So, great chapters. It just builds all this tension. So,
I do like how we've. This is my highlight. I don't want to jump the gun, but my highlight is that I like how we've brought back the idea of the cracked gemstones in the armor and related it back to this, where Dalinar's like, if we suppose that this is the same people that did that,
right.
It's another convoluted attempt, you know, a very hopeful, if he gets bucked off his horse and those gemstones are cracked at the Chasm Fiend Hunt, he may die. If he goes out and leans on this rail, you know what I mean? And there's no one there to save him, he might die.
Right.
It sounds like it's the same people in that's what Dalinar's thinking, because they're both kind of convoluted assassination attempts. But I like that we're being reminded...
But he cut the saddle, the strap himself.
Right. But
so the first attempt was done by the king.
Well, the first attempt was done by the king, yes. But the king didn't know the gemstones were cracked. And the people who cracked the gemstones wouldn't have known that the king was going to cut his own strap, right? So it's even more of a convoluted thing. It's not like the two things were combined into one attempt. They were two separate things completely that happened by accident. So... Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because I'm glad we haven't forgotten about that earlier thing that happened with the king, and now it's kind of coming back. The difference now is Kaladin's involved, and I really like that. That's a different factor from the first time.
My highlight is the detective. I like that Kaladin. I like that Kaladin runs in there and he's not necessarily responsible for it. He almost acts like he is. So he almost apologizes and he's telling Dalinar, like, you know, if I had known, you know, he was, you know, just willing to take it on, even though it's not his responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Arrives, you know, bends down, sees this cut. It happens rather quickly, but I imagine that very, very well, that when Moash takes him out on the balcony and, you know, it's really cool.
It's really awesome.
Yeah, it's a great chapter.
Yeah, it's really great. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yep.
So I also like a lot an info dump. Unfortunately, we don't really have a big info dump today. The only thing that I really took note of was the ruby. Just a tiny one. It's like a little bit of a wee dump
today.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the ruby stormlight, the heating fabrial that Navani created. Mm. I like how there's this the light inside. Cal says that the ruby should have been blinding with the size of the ruby.
Yeah,
the light emanating from it should have been blinding, but no one was blinded by it. So it must have been a trick of how she made it so that it would use the force inside for heating purposes, but like tone down the light that it emits. Right.
Right. Yeah. 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 Mm.
He says that illumination of a sphere is said to be calm, right? It's more calming than firelight, because fire is always crackling, but you have to look inside to see the chaotic patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we briefly touched on it, and I just like it a lot.
Yeah, it's so cool. I like how we were saying it's like, you know, a metaphor or a symbol for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He looks calm on the outside, but inside there's this storm of light, you know.
It could be a metaphor for a lot of different characters. That could be Shallan, right?
100%.
Shallan is literally putting on a face and being calm on the outside.
Yeah.
She's doing the what would Yasna do front.
Right.
And on the inside, she's just a boil of emotions trying to figure everything out, right?
And Teft.
So yeah, it's Teft.
Yeah. Same thing there, right? Like
we don't know anything about Teft, but we know that he's always got a straight face, and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the episode, everyone. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, you can do so two ways. You can do so indirectly by rating and reviewing where you can, or just telling people to listen. You know, there's all kinds of socials out there that you can go on and go, hey, I like these two dudes. They're really good. I don't know why I do that voice, but...
Hey!
Or you can do so directly by going to patreon.com/heroesof and signing up for the Patreon team. You can join the Discord server. You can get higher up tiers. You can get bonus material that Jack and I put out. We have this really cool thing on the weekend we do called Ugly Mugs, where we wake up completely too early in the morning and drink coffee and talk about the week that was. So it's pretty fun. If you're part of the Discord server, you're actually given the link for that, so you can join in on the conversation and ask questions and just kind of be part of the whole talk. So it's super fun. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofhakathra@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at heroesof1. Or the best place to find us is the Storm Pod on Instagram. Love checking out all the fan art. It's just such a great place to be. But anyways, thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.